What We Lose by Zinzi Clemons is a deeply felt, expertly crafted exploration of a young woman of color coming of age as she loses her mother to cancer. Along the way, Clemons' protagonist Andy delves into issues of race and ethnicity, family, romance, and the challenges that come with losing a parent and ultimately becoming one. Through raw, memory-telling episodes, What We Lose offers a bird's eye view into identity development as we all consider what it is to share the never-ending cycle of life. On this hour of The Keenest Observers, writer Zinzi Clemons is with us to talk about her debut novel, What We Lose. Thank you for being here, Zinzi.
Thanks for having me.
Right on. Zinzi Clemons is a writer and editor raised in Philadelphia with roots in South Africa and Trinidad. She received a BA in Critical Theory and Literary Arts from Brown and an MFA in Fiction from Columbia. Her writing has appeared in Zoetrope, All Story, Transition, The Paris Review Daily, and elsewhere. She is co-founder and former publisher of Apogee Journal and is a contributing editor to LitHub.com. She teaches literature and creative writing at the Colburn Conservatory and Occidental College. What We Lose is Zinzi Clemons' debut novel. And just like all of your expertise and credits that I see, What We Lose is a very broad novel and exploration of a woman, a young woman, in life cycle. And I don't think I did a great job at describing it. How do you describe it?
Well, I think it's definitely difficult to describe. I know that for a fact from trying to do it many times. I think, one thing is that it's the plot really doesn't get at, I think, what the book is about. Like, I can describe the plot in a couple sentences. It's about a young woman whose mother dies and basically what happens afterwards. But to me, what I always try and kind of add into my descriptions is that it's a really psychological exploration of grief, like some kind of indication that you are exploring the psychology of someone who is going through this process.
Right. I think that's an incredible way of explaining how you used your own upbringing to inform this particular character, but also you contextualize the work in the world and in current time and in very pluralistic terms in terms of society and individuals. And I think that's the genius of the work, that it then informs what it is to walk in grief throughout space. People have called your book a meditation. How do you describe it? When you hear that, what does that mean to you? Was that an intention of yours as you were writing it?
I guess so. To me, that just means that it's like sort of very studied. And I think that's true. The book doesn't move along quickly. It kind of jumps through time and it kind of lingers on one subject or another, I think, for maybe longer than we're used to seeing in works of literature. I think that's accurate, or some other word like it.
Right. Then you hear meditation. It's very episodic. So if folks go check out the book, you'll see that there are moments that may take one page or may take four pages or may take eight pages. And then there, is a confluence of time and within those memory points. And it's a very, very interesting way to organize a story about a person's life, which is really kind of I think that's kind of intentional, right? You kind of mentioned, and I think in some of the words that I've seen written about your work, you were very intentional about that.
I think it's people have called it a coming of age novel as well, and it's really I was trying to build this life of this character, Tandi. So a lot of it was, about, thinking about how she would behave in all different parts of her life and sort of giving her history. It was all part of, presenting like a very kind of deep portrait of who this person is.
Right. So the book follows Tandi through her high school years to her young adult years, but also frames her origins as being a child of African diasporic people. Is that a way that's mm-hmm. fair?
Yeah.
To kind of characterize her origins?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that particular identity base then allows for like a really interesting conversation. Like so this is a challenge I've had. I'll tell you very much, Zinzi, is like after I've read the book and then mm-hmm. I start reading about you. And I guess it's challenging to I start conflating. I'll be really honest, I start conflating, like, okay,
sure.
I've got to like focus not to say her when I'm really talking about them. You know, but how much of you and your background is a part of this, you know, book, you know, folk call it semi-autobiographical, et cetera. How much, what was the parallel?
Yeah. So the book began with some of the passages are still included, but they're basically like these very, very short, intense meditations about grief that I actually took as like journal entries while my own mother was sick while she was going through this. And I didn't intend for them to be published. I was just like taking notes, but, they started to show up in some of my other work. And, I started to, at some point, think about writing a book, built around them. So some of the parts that you see, like that are in hospitals are like, physical observations of what happens to people when they're dying. Like those are, almost 100% autobiographical.
Gotcha.
But they're not exactly about me. You know, right. It's sort of generalized what happens to people when they're very sick. That part is, you know,
very
true,
close.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's pick up there after this first break. If you're just joining us, I'm Robert Goodwin. My guest is author Zinzi Clemons, and we're talking about her debut novel, What We Lose. Stay with us. First, a short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin. We're talking to Zinzi Clemons, author of the novel What We Lose. You're welcome to join the conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm sorry, Zinzi, I had to cut you off, and you were telling me a little bit about the episodic structure and how it came from journal entries that you were writing. So,
And no problem. I was saying that those journal entries that sort of comprise the heart of the book, those are real journal entries. This is one of the elements of the book that is very close to my story. The second part is as you mentioned before, the identity of one of the parents. So my mother was also South African, and she was she's very close to the mother character in the book. I had always written about South Africa and my travels there, like as basically a way of understanding race, both in America and kind of just in general, because I think being there sort of puts certain things into really sharp relief, and it has always really informed my understanding and an interest in talking about race and identity.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I think that is, again, one of the finer points of the novel is the framing and juxtaposition of race and culture from the continent of Africa and pulling the threads to race in America. You unabashedly dive into a real broad swatch of issues. Like one of the, you know, in one episode, Tandy deals with, you know, her fair skin and a white classmate, you know, saying, what quote, but you're not like a real black person. And then in contrast, her mother, you know, is dealing with this, you know, complex, you know, dynamic in the African diaspora community about, you know, straight hair being beautiful. What do you think is achieved by that, you know, setting Tandy in between worlds in that way, as we, you know, kind of discuss race and that framing?
Well, what I hope it achieves is that it sort of gives, you know, some perspective on how these issues look. I think, you know, I didn't attempt to offer any answers about any of these questions. I think I just kind of set them up as questions or statements. These are things that happen. And, you know, from my experience and all the black women and even just, you know, brown women in general, that I know have gone through something like that. And I just think it's important to kind of consider these issues from every angle, and to kind of have all of the information as opposed to, you know, shying away from these kinds of conversations.
Right. I think that that again, very effective jumping off point from a number of points of view. Our show is called The Keenest Observers for a comparable reason that I've heard, you know, you talk about in the press. I was checking out the Vogue article where you were saying the advantage of being an outsider is seeing things a little more clearly. And we have that same idea. In fact, it was the same idea that started this particular segment of the Jefferson Exchange. But, I mean, can you amplify that idea and how does that inform your writing? I think you're pulling that thread in general and in What We Lose specifically.
Yeah, so first of all, like, for anyone to be a writer, you have to sort of by definition be an observer, right? When you're writing about something, you cannot at the same time literally be, if you're doing something, you cannot at the same time be writing about it, at least not effectively. You need to have some distance from whatever your subject is.
Right.
But I think what makes probably some of the best writers that we've known is that they have some trait that manifests in them being an outsider in some way. So whether that's like that they're just very shy and don't like to be around people, or whether it's, you know, some kind of combination of identity that means that they're not fully accepted by any group. It's very important that, you know, the writer sort of be off to the side and thinking and observing rather than, you know, kind of leading the march and going, you know, hey, yeah, let's go. You know, the writer is the person who has to stay off to one side. And I think that for many reasons you can be predisposed to that kind of outsiderhood, but it's something that I think is pretty much you always see there.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I read the book, it's very clear. I get that sense, you know, in terms of the narrative voice, for sure, is like the description of the writer that you just mentioned. And I think that's what's really appealing, at least to me, about them being able to see the very, like, complex thoughts about not only grief, but, you know, the world in which we live, the juxtaposition of what it is to be, you know, intelligent, but then, you know, dealing with, you know, the challenge of just regular developmental issues like how you deal with family, how you exchange in relationship with parents, you know, what that means to the larger world. And then, you know, what happens when you become, you know, a parent? You know, I think, you know, that's, you know, really amazing about, you know, being able to watch an observer in this context, you know, kind of, or we have the bird's eye view into someone who's obviously observing and then experiencing. So, yeah, I totally understand, you know, that reference. What do you believe the value? I'm gonna switch gears a little bit. The world of what we lose seems purposefully pluralistic as well. You know, it has two black parents in the home, but a white redheaded Portland dude who reads biographies of Malcolm X as a love interest. Shout out to the Rose City, you know, Oregon in the house. You know, it has math and Biggie lyrics. You know, what was the intention of making the world such a melange of influences?
I mean, that part wasn't really intentional at all. I mean, it's just kind of authentic to who I am, and I think, you know, increasingly who we are as a society. I've never distinguished very much between, you know, different parts of culture or, you know, different types of people. So it's just kind of true to my worldview. Really.
Very, very open and plural and multi in that respect. Yeah. Is that part of like your rearing? You're from Philly, and then you moved though to what is it, Swarthmore? Was Swarthmore a small town, or was it a suburb, or what was that? How was that transition, and did that inform your worldview in that respect, or did you think, was it just a part of who you were?
Yeah, no, it absolutely did. I think when we moved, the demographics basically flipped, going from like a majority black and brown town where we lived to a majority white town, and not really a whole lot of outside influence, like not many people from other countries. Mostly white American. It was very jarring. And that experience, along with my mother was South African, and every like basically two or three summers she would take my brother and I to South Africa to spend time with her family. And there also, I was like very kind of dislocated from other groups. And I think just that experience of going from one to the other and seeing how people behave differently, but basically it's all just, you know, to a certain extent arbitrary. I think it definitely informed how I kind of see things and how I'm an outsider, I guess, from that perspective.
We're talking to author Zinzi Clemons, writer of What We Lose, her debut novel. You said it was arbitrary. What do you mean by arbitrary, meaning people are arbitrary, or the experience being between the two spaces is arbitrary? Can you inform me a little bit?
No, this is the way that people are like categorized and stereotyped, basically.
Gotcha.
You know, what we consider a black person to be, a white person to be, you know, like the concept of race is one that was invented by people. You know, the concept of black and white didn't exist, and they have both been, you know, they're constantly changing. Like, these are just inventions. You know, especially when you go from one culture to another and you see how, for lack of a better word, arbitrary these designations actually are. It's just very easy to see kind of the seams and why they're not real things.
I hear you. I want to just kind of talk about this for a second, because, you know, you also have been quoted as saying, you know, that you were hyper aware of race as youth. Is that a byproduct of seeing like the whole of people and their existence, or was that the transition of kind of going from a very diverse city growing up to a very homogenous city? Is that, yeah, that's where I had to get my own thoughts together on that one. Yeah.
No, I think it's, yeah, you know, the thing that really kind of it encapsulates this is the idea of colored people, So that's Coloured, and that is the race of mixed race people in South Africa. So in South Africa, my family is called colored, but there's no like analog to that in the United States. So I could call myself that all I wanted to, but it would mean nothing to anyone over here.
Right.
And so things like that, you know, where you have an entire race somewhere else and it has this entire, system kind of built around it, about where the people can live and go to school and et cetera, et cetera. You see it for what it is that it's just something that somebody made up. So I think it's, yeah, probably to a certain extent, like just seeing people live in all different kinds of ways, but, you know, they're basically all the same at the end of the day. I think that really, that's sort of what made me interested in writing the way that I do about identity.
And for context, listeners, in apartheid South Africa, we're referencing the designation of black, white, and then this third designation, colored, which would be mixed race folk, which we really don't have here in formal terms. Informal, you may have your own experience with that in terms of what it is to be of a darker hue within a particular category or a lighter hue. And so there, you know, are a whole kind of, there are a ton of dynamics with that as well. So, switching gears again, and maybe I'll back up really quickly. I think this is an interesting point because in Southern Oregon, we're a small enclave of folk, most definitely with a larger population of white folk, but there are people of color who move here and have comparable experience. And I think it's really interesting to see the thread of that dynamic, what it is to come from maybe what you know to something that you don't know, and then how you proceed in life. And I think What We Lose does a great job in showing a particular experience. And so, audience, go check out the book. It's really good. You know, you'll be able to see yourself within the particular experience. So let me ask you this. I have a lot of friends, believe it or not, that are caregivers to their parents, especially at this point in life, and across different ages. Some of them are in their 30s, and then some of them are, you know, in their 40s. What was the biggest lesson that you learned being a caregiver to your mother, and how did that inform the writing?
It's almost hard to measure, I think, the full impact that it had on me. I think probably most obvious, it was a huge dose of humility, which I think is important to like never forget, really. I think for the most part, they're character lessons, you know, about how you should behave and the importance of sacrifice, which I think did really make me, when I was finished caretaking, made me really, I think, pursue writing the book really, really kind of fervently, because I had this this incredibly huge experience where I learned all of these lessons, and I felt like I think after that I felt, you know, very ready to put everything into this project. But it's, you know, intangible in some ways.
Right. I think, you know, that what I've heard from those friends of mine who are engaged in that endeavor, as well as, you know, my own observation with it, is that it puts you in a place where you can deal with like what it is to engage in a in the latter part of the life cycle, right? Folks have this idea of what it is to be birthed into the life cycle and maybe to go through different stages of development, youth, you know, adolescence, adulthood. But when you caretake for someone who's going, you know, to, you know, the next place, if you will, or whatever you construct, you know, death to be, that makes you have to deal with a whole nother level of human development in a way. It has a lot of intangibles, but I think, you know, those people, my friends, really are founded in a way in terms of life and how they like take life and move forward. And that I've observed, that's been really, really amazing to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that's the other thing is that it really did demystify dying for me. And I think in the process made me much less afraid of it. And right. I think that that has led to like all kinds of good behaviors.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Zinzi Clemons and talk about her novel, What We Lose, after this break. We're back with the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin hosting. My guest is Zinzi Clemons, and we're talking about her debut novel, What We Lose. You're welcome to join this conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. Zinzi, one of my favorite lines in the book is on one page, and it says, "Sex is kicking death in the ass while singing." given what we left off with in the last segment, I think it's very interesting. There's nothing like the reconciliation of the death transition with an affirmation of life. Is that what you were getting at?
Not exactly. And first, a note on that quote. I'm really glad that you said that. That quote I came across somewhere, like I think someone posted it on social media and I really liked it and I wrote it down. And I think that person attributed it to Charles Bukowski. But then later on, when I wanted to use it, I couldn't find that attribution anywhere. So I don't actually know where it came from. It's just unattributed in the book. But that's just sort of a side note. I think what I was getting at there was not so much the link of life and death, because I also, you know, the sex there doesn't have to be like reproductive, and I wouldn't intend for to basically, you know, kind of link sex and reproduction. Mm-hmm. But it's more. For me, it was more about, like, I guess, sort of the sensations of each, that when you are, like, completely present, you know, in such a moment during sex, you can't really be thinking about dying. Mm. And so in those ways, it's sort of equivalent to or almost as powerful as. And I think what I was kind of intending there and in a couple of other passages in the book was to sort of like empower sex and to make sex feel powerful, that it can do such a thing. So that was my intention.
And yeah. I think it's really a beautiful thing that you present a character who is, you know, who we see come from her adolescence to young adulthood, who's very comfortable with her sexuality as well, and the expression of her sexuality, regardless of how it hits, in challenge or, you know, in comfortability. It's very clear that that was a part of the construct. What do you think that does in terms of what does that communicate, you know, in for audience, for youth, for anyone, I guess, who's walking the path?
I mean, I guess I hope that it again sort of feels empowering to women, you know, like just to kind of, because I think what I'm trying to do in the book is like basically trying to normalize some of those behaviors, because I don't present her as like, you know, oh, this, you know, it's not like some didactic kind of like, this is an example of womanhood, of, you know, wonderful womanhood or something. I don't know. I just kind of present her as she is. And I think, yeah, I think those are the messages that can kind of like most effectively seep in, you know, when you just kind of present things like as they are with little fanfare.
Okay, I have to go here because, you know, for all of us Oregonians, how did you get the reference to Portland? I mean, we got to be homers for a second. How did you come up with that Portland, Oregon reference in the Rose City?
Honestly, I just, the character kind of came to me first, and I knew that I wanted him to be from the West Coast. And at some point, I just realized that this character seemed like he would be from Portland. you know, it was just sort of one of those strokes, a divine stroke, if you will.
Right. I think it's interesting. So for the audience, the description, when Tandy first meets her love interest, he's in a bar, he's redheaded, and then reading a biography of Malcolm X in the bar. I mean, to me, that's just yelled Portland to me. I've seen so many of those cats in Portland, and it was a beautiful thing. That's another reason to go check out the book, man. I keep on telling you, folk, go check out the book. It has very interesting threads, especially for folk in our area. To that end, going backward a little bit, like not having didactic representation, you use when Tandy ultimately has to deal with the prospect of being pregnant in the book. A really interesting back reference to her African, South African identity, and using Winnie Mandela as a kind of a trope and frame to deal with, you know, how we conceive motherhood. You know, the idea of Winnie being the mother of South Africa, but also having this challenge of having these accusations of murder as part of the ANC. And then you have this really interesting quote that says that like, the truth is that motherhood is stained with blood, tainted with suffering and the potential for tragedy. Why are we surprised when a mother, a real mother, someone who takes care of her children and loves them, commits atrocious crimes? These are the questions I wrestle with in the days and weeks that I consider my own pregnancy. How did you come up with that? I mean, artist to artist, I think that's an incredible, that was an incredible idea. To frame that idea of what it is to really the ruthlessness, as my mother says, the humane ruthlessness that sometimes human beings have to kind of exert to live. I mean, how did you come up with that?
I mean, so this whole portion on motherhood, when Tandy is basically, when she finds out that she's pregnant and she's figuring out what to do, That whole part was the most difficult for me, because I don't have any experience with it myself, and I've really never thought about having kids in a serious way. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I felt like I kind of started to put myself in the head of a pregnant character, it was when I was kind of connecting with some of the kind of darkness of it. So when I started to, you know, read sort of accounts, I did some research and like read as many sort of like first person accounts as I could about being pregnant. I kind of connected with those parts when they were sort of admitting to, you know, either bad thoughts or bad behaviors or anxiety in general, or like how uncomfortable it is in your body. I mean, I guess that's what makes a good character, is, you know, to have different shades, basically. So those darker parts of it, I felt like they needed to be part of that, that representation of motherhood in the book. That just felt more authentic to me.
You also deal with relationship in terms of father-daughter relationship in a particularly, you know, insightful and way, pre and post the transition of a loved one. What do you think becomes the stiffest challenge in those circumstances? If you could generalize, given where you were coming from, what do you think becomes the stiffest challenge between a daughter and her father in these kind of situations?
There are a lot. I think probably... I sort of hint at this in the book. The greatest fear is like disconnection, you know. So, you know, the father in the book, I think, is you know, he's a kind of typically reserved sort of middle-aged man, and you know, I don't think it's an overgeneralization to say that like men have been kind of socially sort of have been socially encouraged to, you know, not express their feelings and to internalize things instead of, you know, telling people how they feel. These behaviors are significant, and I think, you know, especially in my own experience, it is a tendency of men to sort of shut down. And I think, you know, when you have an adult child, you don't live near each other. Like, there's that danger that, you know, the relationship can kind of permanently change. I think that's, yeah, probably... probably the biggest danger.
What do you,
at least think.
In parallel, what do you think is the biggest lesson that Tandy learns from her mother's life? Okay, I didn't mean to stop.
Sorry.
At the end of the program, I didn't mean to stop. Throw a stop.
No, that's really hard. There are a lot of things, but I was beginning to kind of think in my mind probably something about courage. I don't know if I can be much more specific.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the challenge of the book, right? It you know, you set, you know, these people, and especially, you know, the mother, who is a very strong woman in the book, but you know, you also have lines about, you know, missing the possibility of laying on her chest and breast, you know, so that you know, there's that breadth of experience that happens in our communities, and I think in the human community, about mothers taking care, but also bringing us to task and what it is to have that breadth of experience, and then, you know, when it moves on, like, you know, the very lyrical portion of your book that, you know, is very poetic, and, you know, but she's not here. I know her. She's here, but she's not here, you know, having that kind of experience. So, yeah, I understand. It's very broad. It's very broad. Mm-hmm. And the last, I guess, minute and a half that we have, in the same stead, what do you think folks should take away from your book? I'm getting them at the end, man. Zingers at the end.
Yeah, I know. I just hope that, you know, maybe people, you know, are sort of surprised by the direction that, you know, your thoughts can take you. I don't know if that's accurate, but basically, you know, I consider a lot of issues, I think, pretty deeply, and I think that basically that people should do that more, you know, instead of kind of jumping to easy conclusions, or, you know, especially now, like, do things very quickly. These things are the enemies of, like, actual, like, solutions and, you know, good solutions. So I think just, you know, I hope that it encourages people to think about things for longer, and also maybe to consider things from perhaps a different point of view as well.
Right. Most definitely. People, go get a journal and write, mm-hmm. and get your moments and thoughts developed. In about the next 15 seconds, what do you have up next? What's your next topic about?
I've been writing a lot of essays, and my next book will probably be an essay collection.
Beautiful. We look forward to it. Thank you, Zinzi Clemons, for joining us. The book is What We Lose, a novel by Zinzi Clemons. Appreciate your time.